So the candidates flipped a coin earlier this morning to determine the order of opening statements. With that, I understand that John James will go first.
All right, well, here we are. Thank you all for coming. It's an honor to be here, standing in the State Senate Stabenow. Thank you for being here. I am running because I have a passion for service. I'm running because I love this country. And I grew up in Detroit. I was born and raised in Detroit, and I am a combat veteran who understands national security as a result of my training at West Point and my firsthand experience on the battlefield. I understand what it takes to keep this country safe because I've done it before. I understand veteran issues the way that you only do if you are a veteran. I'm also a business leader in Detroit Economic Club. It's especially important we're focusing on the economy because we want to bring everybody up to give everyone a shot at the American dream. I believe that Michigan manufacturing is key and must be protected. I believe understanding how family businesses run and the headwinds that face 80% of businesses in this state is something we need on the floor of the U.S. Senate. And I also believe that we need to protect the American dream by making sure that we are investing in our futures and the educational system for our children. But as we've gone through, Senator Stabenow is a very, very nice lady. A lot of us know her. But I believe that over time, Senator Stabenow has become ineffective, she's become hyperpartisan, and she's lost a bit of credibility given her record. Senator Stabenow, in 18 years as a U.S. Senator, has gotten 5 bills passed into law that she sponsored. And in 43 years, collected $4 million in taxpayers' money, and there's so many places around here that haven't looked any different in that time frame. She votes with New York Senators Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer 93% of the time and 95% of the time, respectively. That represents New York, not Michigan families. And I believe, All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to the debate. Let's do this.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you to the Detroit Economic Club for once again hosting this debate. It's great to be here with my opponent, John James, and with all of you. I do have to say, I look across this room, I think I could go to every single table just about and talk about what we have worked on together, partnering to bring jobs and economic activity, to be able to redo the riverfront, isn't it beautiful, and all the downtown efforts in Detroit that are going on, as well as the neighborhoods, because it's critical that our neighborhoods and schools are strong for Detroit to be strong. Eastern Market, so many areas where we are partnering together. I also know we have to focus on our other cities, and I'm proud to partner with Pontiac and Flint and Saginaw and so many cities across our state. You know, I understand the innovation and the talent, not only in this room, but in this state, from the Defense Corridor in Macomb County to Automation Alley in Oakland County to all of the technology going on. That was why I went to the U.S. Patent Office and convinced them to bring the very first satellite patent office to Detroit, which we got done. And I'm so grateful for the Detroit Regional Chamber's endorsement. We worked on that together, and also Michigan Realtors and so many others that are supporting me because of my bipartisan efforts. I have had the opportunity to pass almost 200 pieces of legislation that I have authored since being a legislator. But it's not about the numbers. It's about getting things done for you. These are tough times. These are very difficult, divisive times. And rather than point fingers or make excuses when things can't get done, I work across the aisle. That's why I was able to go to the White House last week, where the president signed a bill of mine addressing lowering pharmaceutical drugs, and why I've been able last week to get a bill signed to make sure we can move forward on the SULACs. I look forward to our discussion. Before we dive in on questions, I just want to make sure that, just a reminder that we have three bells, three chimes. The 1 minute, minute 45, and 2 minutes, correct? You got it? Okay, let's make sure. You want to just play it again so you can hear the difference? That's the one. 1:45. That means you're in trouble.
Okay. All right. So anyway, so everyone knows the chime. So let's get things going here. I have the honor of asking the first question, and here's the question. Events in D.C. in recent weeks have been a somber look into how far politics have fallen into the gutter. Let's officially close in Michigan the circus that was the Kavanaugh judicial nomination. Senator, you voted no. John, while not privy to the kinds of details that the senator might have been, all of us know more about the Brett Kavanaugh story than we probably ever hoped to know. You, John, get the first question here. Mr. James, based on what you know, what criteria, given all that was reported, the facts, would you have considered, and how would you have voted?
I would have considered all the facts, and of course, this is based upon conjecture and assumption because was not privy to all the information that the senator, of course, had. I believe that we need to have rule of law justices on the Supreme Court, people who have a record of fair, balanced impartiality, and we need to make sure that we protect and preserve our Constitution in a textualist manner to make sure that we preserve it and make sure that we don't have activists on the bench who can change the courts based upon the whims of the people, quite frankly. Jurists and journalists have an obligation to be objective and impartial. And I believe that based upon Judge Kavanaugh's record, he has the capability to be impartial. And also with what he's doing with his clerks, 4 out of 4 are women. And 2 of the 3 African-American women currently serving in the Supreme Court were clerked under Justice Kavanaugh. I believe that both my Republican and my Democrat friends were disgusted and embarrassed by the political wrangling that went on in Washington. And if I can just speak for myself here, but we just want a political system that works and won't embarrass us. And that's a very low standard. And I have the experience bringing people together of different races, colors, creeds, getting things done with groups, moving people together in the toughest of situations. I'm looking forward to using my leadership expertise and experience in the business world and in combat to bring people together and work in concert to help heal this nation the best way that I possibly can. I would have voted for Justice Kavanaugh because I believe that he will be a consistent and fair jurist, and I'm looking forward to moving forward and in bringing this nation together.
Senator Stabenow, the question here for you is, tell us specifically why you voted no and why it was not about partisan politics.
Well, thank you, Carol. Everything I do, I see through the lens of Michigan. When Joan Larson was nominated to be on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, she was a Michigan Supreme Court justice put on the bench by a Republican governor. I had an opportunity to look at her record, to listen to everyone, to meet with her, and I supported her and helped her get through that process. When it came to Brett Kavanaugh, in my judgment, he is not the best for Michigan. And in fact, I voted no when he was first brought forward for the DC Circuit Court, the second most important court in our country, because of decisions he had made. I looked deeply at his record. I would note my opponent took 9 minutes after the announcement before coming out in supporting him. I took much more time, both before he was put on the DC Circuit and for his work in looking at the US Supreme Court. Why? He's made decisions against Clean Water Act that are not in our interests in Michigan. He has made decisions on health care that would continue to unravel the health care system, not in our best interest in Michigan. He is the only one on the list that the president had that has strong, what I feel, out of the mainstream positions regarding presidential power, where he has written that a president could override the Supreme Court, essentially, if the court ruled something unconstitutional. We don't have that in our country. They may have it in Syria and Russia and other places in the world, not in America. And finally, of deep concern to me, is there are Russian nationals now that have been charged with interfering in the election in terms of dollars, putting dollars into groups, and they're using an actual writing of just now Justice Kavanaugh to defend their position that it's all right for foreign nationals to give dollars two American elections. In my judgment, he's the wrong person for Michigan.
And let's continue on with the questions. The first question comes from Chuck Stokes for Senator Stabenow.
Thank you very much, Carol. And candidates, thank you for joining us today for this very important forum. The first question of the cards I've gone through, and there are a considerable number, one of the biggest categories deals with the fiscal integrity of this nation, and certainly a topic that is near and dear to the Detroit Economic Club, our host this particular afternoon. The last time I checked, the national debt was about $21 billion. That's B, capital B for billion, trillion, all right, capital T. And what they want to know is, do you believe it is possible to achieve a balanced budget? Will the federal government ever get smaller? And why is it okay for us to continue to operate the federal government without a balanced budget? Because the state of Michigan and many other states do it every single year. Senator?
Well, thank you, Chuck. When I came into the U.S. House in 1997, we actually balanced the budget for the first time in 30 years. I like to think it was because I was there 6 months, but I think it was more than that. But I can tell you what I do in my responsibility to bring down costs. When I took over as chair of the U.S. Senate Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, there was an effort to have a deficit reduction commission, if you remember that. Each committee, each department was asked to designate how much they would cut. We did that. We put forward, based on the percentage of funding in agriculture, a cut of $23 billion, put that on the table. In the end, the whole deficit commission collapsed. But we decided, in writing the Farm Bill, I wanted to follow through on our promise. And so I went to the staff and said, we're not going to protect programs. We're going to look at everything. Does it work? Doesn't it work? What has value? What doesn't? We ended up cutting 100 different programs, or consolidating those programs within the USDA. In fact, saving tens of billions of dollars in that budget. And the budget office has now said it's actually more than 23, that through the course of this decade, it will be more than $80 billion. I believe if every single committee did what we had done on the Agriculture Committee, we would be a whole lot closer to balancing the budget. And I will continue to focus on those things that will streamline, focus on effectiveness, cut costs where necessary, and also focus on effectiveness where we spend our tax dollars.
Chuck, do you want to pose the question to Mr. James?
Same question. What will you do if you get elected to the U.S. Senate to be able to use that position to make sure that the United States is fiscally responsible and tries to whittle down that national debt?
Yes, sir. So, Senator, respectfully, you've been in Washington for 20 years. Why should we believe you this time? You've had two decades to take the opportunity to lower the deficit and to lower our debt. And in the time that you've been in Washington, the debt has increased $16 trillion. That's a bill that I'm going to have to pay. And that's a bill that those young men and women over there in the corner are going to have to pay. You've had the opportunity to do this and have not. But what you have proposed is an additional $32 trillion from a full government takeover of our health care. That sends our seniors to the back of the bus and burdens future generations by mortgaging our futures. We need to make sure that we are implementing strong business practices that I have learned a little bit of from folks like my dad and people like you out there in the audience. And I understand that in order to fix this, you know, 3 to 5% economic growth, that has to be table stakes. We have to grow the economy and we have to cut waste. And also, I believe that we need to have a balanced budget amendment. We need to get rid of this omnibus spending. We need to vote on single issue bills, which will force our legislators to take a position on something and not hide behind the bureaucracy and the political wrangling. I also believe that, look, how do you have government shutdowns? How do you run out of money? You print the money. How do you run out? I mean, if you run out of money in a business, or if you run out of money in a household, look, I believe our politicians, if we run out of money and we shut down the government, should not be allowed to leave, should not get paid. Staff should not be allowed to leave and should not get paid. Health benefits should not continue until you fix the problem. because this is something that affects each and every single one of us and will impact our generation. We have too many people in Washington who are legislating and regulating futures they're not going to be a part of, and that's not fair.
So the senator has asked, she wants to rebut, right?
Just a small rebuttal on fact. I think facts are important. I am not supporting the legislation that the that he talked about in terms of Medicare for All. I'm not on that bill. Secondly, when my opponent talks about legislating every year and not having ongoing spending, I want to tell you what that means. It's Medicare, Social Security, veterans benefits. Those are called mandatory spending. They're not up to the whims of the politics of the yearly budget. When my mom, who's here and is 92 years old and going strong, and thank you, Mom, for being here, but she is someone, she's someone who's counting on her Medicare and Social Security. It's not left up to the whims. It's ongoing funding. It's called mandatory funding. And I absolutely reject the idea that that should be part of the yearly budget.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. How long did that go?
So Social Security must be kept secure. We must keep our promises to our seniors today, but also keep our promises to our seniors tomorrow. Right over there. We have an obligation. We call this in the military mission first people always. We don't get to pick either or. We have to do both. And that means making tough decisions and making tough decisions, making sure that we keep Social Security secure, making sure that we make Medicare secure, making sure we keep our promises to our veterans in a way that has not happened in this state, in this country. I'm looking forward to delivering and making sure that we have tough conversations and do the right thing the right way, because the way we're trending, we're going to find ourselves on another crisis, and that is unacceptable.
So we are going to move on to the next question, Chad Livingood, and the question goes to Mr. James. But before we do, is this timing? Is it a wash? They both about the same
we're
time?
Good. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we're going to ignore the fact you both rebutted, even though we agreed.
Okay.
You washed each other out, so we'll just let it go.
Thank you, candidates. We got a lot of questions about trade policy and tariffs, given that that's a big economic issue right now. Mr. James, how will you fix our trade issues with China and do so in not harming U.S. industry and consumers, and specifically, just how will you get the president to stop waging a trade war?
Well, I'm going to ride in on my white horse, wave my magic wand, and fix everything day one. But in seriousness, you have to work in concert and work with anyone and everyone. And I believe that my business experience in negotiating tough deals with both the automotive industry and our labor union, it will help assist in negotiating these tough deals. See, look, yes, we need free but fair trade. Yes, we need reciprocal trade deals. And I don't call this a trade war because I've been to war. This is a contract negotiation. We need to make sure that we are not enabling China to continue to push out into the South China Sea and weaponize islands, continue to make sure we hold their feet to the fire in making sure the Korean Peninsula denuclearizes. And the lever we have is our economic might. We must negotiate from a position of strength, but understanding that right now people at home are hurting. I believe my understanding as an automotive supplier, negotiating tough deals, being able to advocate for the automotive and manufacturing industries puts me in a much better position than my opponent. I have the business experience on this stage, and I'm looking forward to bringing it to bear. Two, understanding how this affects our farmers, because I'm a family business owner, and I recognize that our farmers are facing issues with trade, regulation, and labor issues. By making sure that we fix some things in the input costs to make sure that they're not operating at higher cost and decreasing prices and having their American dream crushed in between, I'm looking forward to making sure that we hold China and other countries who are taking advantage of American workers and farmers and factory workers, hold them accountable, because you can no longer steal our intellectual property. You can no longer manipulate currency. You can no longer have predatory business deals where China takes advantage of the American worker and the American business. We need to close loopholes. We need to end these negotiations quickly, and I have the skill set with my business background to work with the president and anyone else to bring these trade negotiations to a swift end to benefit Michigan.
Chad, would you like to pose
it?
Would you like to pose a question to Senator Stabenow, please?
Senator, just how do you think we should go about addressing the trade issues with China, and just sort of use your opponent's language, how do we end this contract negotiation amicably?
Well, Chad, thank you very much. The area of trade is one that I have been involved with since being in D.C. on your behalf. We're the sixth largest exporting state. I want to make sure we're exporting our products, not our jobs, and that we have a level playing field. So that's where I start. I authored legislation that has resulted in an International Trade Enforcement Office that now the administration is using to go forward on these issues. And as a senior member of the Finance Committee that oversees trade, I'm involved with the administration, with the U.S. Trade Rep, Bob Lighthizer, on a regular basis. Let me step back and say my biggest concern is not about moving forward to do trade enforcement, but the White House has done everything at the same time. They've created incredible uncertainty and instability for many of you in this room. We're seeing announcements now of trade, of layoffs, and of concerns about rising costs. So from my perspective, first of all, I would start with NAFTA, get that right. There's some good things that have happened there. Class 7 milk, which is something I've been working on with the dairy industry, other areas that deal with content and wages with Mexico. I don't want the sucking sound of Mexico being played that people are going there for $2 an hour wages. I want them to be our customers. So fix NAFTA, and then we've got to make sure that we are laser focused on using the tools that we have individually. We've brought counterfeit auto part cases and won under Section 301. We have brought Chinese tire cases and won. I now have the Federal Trade Commission investigating a case brought to me by Exalt in Midland over a Chinese electric bus system and undercutting their competition. I remember the time that I was able to take an FBI counterparts unit into a Las Vegas trade show to actually arrest some folks bringing in counterfeit auto parts who are hurting a Livonia company. So I'm all about doing it, but I want to do it right.
So I know that Senator went over. Do you by how much?
8 seconds.
All right, so you have 8 seconds to say the answer for the next question, which Vicki Thomas has, and you're directing it to Senator Sabinow.
Yes, I am. Senator, as you know, coming up on November 6th, we have Proposal 1 on the ballot. What are your feelings about legalizing marijuana, and if this passes, what do you see as potential pitfalls?
Well, thank you very much, Vicki. We actually have three very important proposals on the ballot. The first one is on recreational marijuana. My assumption is that that will pass and that what we need to do is work with law enforcement and public health and others to make sure that this is administered correctly. And across the country, this is the kind of thing passing state by state, which means we're going to have to address uniformity issues as well and figure out what that means federally. I also want to make a pitch for two other proposals. One on the ballot, Proposal 2, that will finally allow a nonpartisan group to decide the lines of districts. I don't think that politicians should be deciding who their voters are. I think voters should decide who their elected officials are, and I strongly support Proposal 2. And Proposal 3, Promote the Vote, is also about guaranteeing the capacity to vote absentee and to have voter integrity, which is even more important today. So three important ballot proposals, and I hope everyone will make sure and vote on all of those. Thank you.
And Senator, I just want to follow up your personal feelings on legalizing
I will be supporting it.
If you'd like to pose a question for Mr. James, what are your feelings about legalizing marijuana and your personal feelings, and then any potential pitfalls when and if this proposal passes?
My personal feelings? My personal feelings is one, I can't vote for the current legislation or the current ballot proposal, but I will absolutely support the will of my state. I believe that we must absolutely have more research into medical marijuana to address the opioid crisis and to especially help folks like our veterans who may be dealing with PTSD and mental issues. I think more research into medical, medicinal benefits of marijuana, I think, is certainly warranted. I also, you asked about my personal feelings, and if I may, the war on drugs has disproportionately negatively affected the African-American community. I would not feel right legalizing something that so many people, so many Michiganders are currently in jail for, nonviolent drug offenses. If we're going to have this ballot amendment go forward, we need to make sure that we're engaging in criminal justice reform such that we are bringing justice to people who've been disproportionately negatively affected by sometimes draconian law enforcement who are honestly just trying to do their jobs. But we also need to take a look at the impacts that this will have on our children, the impacts that this will have on workforce safety. And so I believe that the ballot proposal is problematic. I cannot support in its current form, but I believe there are other avenues to move forward that we can all agree on together, to include social justice issues.
And our next question, Chuck Stokes, is for Mr. James.
All right, thank you very much. As journalists, one of the questions that we get from people out and about on a regular basis is the infrastructure problem in Michigan. Mr. James, if you're elected to the United States Senate from a federal level, what will you do to address Michigan's infrastructure problems, which receives a very low rating from the American Civil Engineers?
Infrastructure is critical. It is critical to our economic growth. Attracting capital investment and attracting and retaining the best talent, continuing to grow Michigan's economy is integral. The thing is, we're not just losing jobs to China and Mexico. We're losing jobs to Texas and Tennessee. We're losing jobs to South Carolina and Alabama because we don't have the environment that businesses are looking for to come here and to invest. We need to make sure that we're looking at our over-the-road, our bridges, looking at our water and sewer, looking at our cyber resources, and making sure that we're planning for our future mobility, making sure that we have V2I, V2X, and V2V technology that will enable us to move forward in the future and not continue to go back through this. But there's also very important infrastructure that we don't talk about. We don't talk about our transit system. We don't talk about the inherent discrimination that's happening because we have people who can't gain access to good jobs or good training. You know, people who are talking about the road so much are people who have cars. And cars are still a luxury in this state. And that is a big problem for people who have a 90-minute commute one way in the snow to get to work. If we're going to continue growing our country, if we're going to continue having people vote, we need to be able to make sure they have access to the polls, that they have access to the training, that they have access to the jobs. And we're not going to grow this state if we don't have a situation where our neighborhoods that are neglected and our farms that are forgotten have a method and means by which to participate in the American dream. We also need to look at the critical infrastructure that is family. Our families are crumbling in this state. And we need to make sure that we invest in our families as much as we consider investing in our infrastructure and tearing back the anti-marriage legislation and regulations that we currently have on the books. Because I'll tell you what, food stamps don't fix fatherhood, and programs don't replace parenting. And Senator Stabenow has had plenty of time to fix these issues, whether it's for Rose or our families, and I'm looking forward to bringing comprehensive ideas both to our Rose, our transit system, and keeping families together to grow our economy.
Chuck, do you want to repeat the question?
Yes, Senator Stabenow, in a system in Washington where seniority plays a major role in terms of what money comes back to particular states, what have you done to make sure that Michigan gets its fair share, and are we getting our fair share, and what would be your priorities in terms of fixing our roads or bridges?
Well, thank you, Chuck. This is a very important issue. We all know that. It's really a combination of federal, state, and local funding, the bulk of it coming from the federal government. I was excited when the president said he wanted to do a major infrastructure bill because we know that for every $1 trillion invested in infrastructure, we create 15 million good middle-class jobs in the state. And I was disappointed that, in fact, he hasn't proceeded with it. In fact, fact, in the first year, the first month he was in office, I was part of a group that put forward, based on his numbers, an idea for an infrastructure bill and said, we want to work with you on it. That still needs to be done. Now, in the absence of that, I've been involved in putting individual projects into the annual budgets. Anyone who drives Mound Road, usually when I get to the end of it, I tweet out, I survived Mound Road, because it's incredibly, it's horrible, but it's incredible part of our Macomb County's defense corridor. And working with Mark Hackle and with the team in Macomb County, we've brought in almost $100 million now to fix Mound Road. We need to focus on water and sewer systems. We know that in the rural infrastructure parts of the Farm Bill, we are adding dollars there. We're adding dollars for high-speed internet, which is critical. A third of our families don't have access to something as basic today as high-speed internet. And I'm very pleased with the fact that the Sioux Locks has been authorized with a specific amount of money needed, finally, after years of fighting with the Army Corps of Engineers to get it right and doing multiple studies to show it is an economic and a national security issue. I was never going to give up on that till we got it done. And last week, we got it done. It's authorized, and we can move forward, and this will be thousands of Michigan jobs. And let me finally just say this. We in Michigan are building a bridge, and Canada's paying for it. So, Mr. James has asked for a very quick rebuttal here. Very quick.
So, most men and women in this room understand that ideas are a dime a dozen. We reward execution. Senator, I would ask you, that all sounds great, but the Sioux Locks are 100 years old. What took you so long? I would ask, why would we believe you right now? You're making a lot of promises, Senator, and respectfully, I believe that's what's more important than seniority is balance. What's more important is making sure that Michigan has a voice in the U.S. Senate, regardless of who's in the majority or who's in the White House. And working closely with Gary Peters, I believe that is most important to make sure that Michigan doesn't fall victim to cyclical environments where we get locked out of the decision-making, where we're not at the table. We need to have a seat at both tables, and having two Democratic senators representing the state of Michigan is not very democratic for at least half our state. We need to have more balance to get more resources back here, and I will work with anyone to get more money and more business back to the state of Michigan.
And Senator Stabenow, Senator Stabenow's asked to rebut the rebuttal.
Well, just for the record, sometimes things move quickly, like my pharmaceutical bill that took 6 months, and sometimes they take years. The difference is I don't give up, and people in this room know that I don't give up. Let me also say, and don't take that away from my time, okay? So, let me also say that when the Army Corps of Engineers rejected the first time around, I went back to work, finding additional dollars, doing a new study. A year and a half ago, hosted a whole bipartisan delegation to go up to the locks with the governor and his staff so that everybody in the Michigan delegation understood how important the Sioux Locks was. We were all hands on deck to get that done. And I would suggest it took the experience, the relationships, the seniority that I have that we finally got it done. It's going to be thousands of jobs and a new lock.
And it took you 43 years.
So, Chad Levengood has the next question, and it's for Senator Stabenow.
Yes, Senator, it's been 8 years since the passage of the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot of questions here about the cost of insurance and health care continues to rise. What would be your proposal to do to bring down premiums, deductibles, copays, and the cost of prescription drugs?
Well, thank you, Chad, very much. You know, this has really been a mixed bag on the Affordable Care Act. On the one hand, the Healthy Michigan that passed, bringing fewer people into emergency rooms without insurance, has actually stabilized a lot of private insurance markets and saved all of us as taxpayers over $400 million. But premiums and copays for too many people are still too high. Here's what we should not be doing, and this is where my opponent and I really really disagree. I don't believe unraveling the whole system, putting decisions back in the hands of insurance companies about whether or not to cover people with pre-existing conditions, or whether you will have caps on the number of treatments, whether you can get dropped when you get sick, whether or not the coverage that you have will be available, or whether or not women will be viewed again as a pre-existing condition because of maternity care and other costs. That is wrong. There are rules that are put in place now to actually allow that to happen by this administration. I oppose that. I oppose the approach of taking away Medicaid not only for minimum wage working people, but also for the 3 out of 5 seniors in Michigan that get their nursing home care through Medicaid. So we have a very different view on this. I want to double down on lowering the cost of prescription drugs, which every healthcare provider in this room will tell you is the number one legitimate way that we can lower costs. And then we need to work together on a better competitive system that will lower costs for people that don't have insurance without taking away your health care. Going back to the old system where 50% of the people in Michigan who have pre-existing conditions can't be covered or will pay an arm and a leg to get it is not what we should be doing. And so I want to move forward in the right way to lower costs, keep coverage, and make sure we have a strong health care system for everyone.
Thank you. To you, Mr. James, what would you do to bring down premiums, deductibles, co-pays, and also, just for the record, do you support the federal mandate barring insurance companies from denying insurance based on pre-existing conditions?
So I'd first like to all due respect, Senator, you are fibbing again. You are misrepresenting my position. I said as recently as yesterday that we must have a market-based, patient-centered approach that must, Senator, cover pre-existing conditions. We need to make sure that we empower doctors and patients, not insurance companies and the federal government. I'm repeating myself because this is very serious. We also need to make sure that we have tort reform and regulatory reform to increase transparency and competition in the market so we can lower healthcare costs, increase quality of care. Again, I mentioned this about 24 hours ago, Senator. But what I do remember is when the last president said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. You supported that. That was the biggest lie of 2013. And from 2014 to May of 2017, before it was touched by the other administration, healthcare premiums went up 90%. It affected my business and the people who work with me massively. And it still does. The thing is, we took a system that was broken and made it worse. And the thing is, you have had 20 years in Washington to have done something about it. And these promises you're making yet again, Senator, why should we believe you? In 2002, you were tapped to lead a task force to lower pharmaceutical drug prices. And not only did our pharmaceutical drug prices spiraled out of control, but you put money, $400,000, in your pocket from the pharmaceutical industry over your career, and we still don't have lower pharmaceutical drug prices. Now that it's an election year, you get something passed in the past May, which is great, but again, what took you so long, Senator? We need these changes, we need these lower costs, and again, I'm going to repeat it because the Senator forgot from yesterday. We need to make sure that we have a market-based, patient-centered approach that covers pre-existing conditions. We need to make sure that we have regulatory reform to increase transparency and competition, and we need to empower doctors and patients, not the federal government and insurance companies.
Vicki Thomas, you asked the last question here, and you direct it to Mr. James, please.
All right, Mr. James, what changes to immigration policy would you propose or would you vote for? And what do you propose doing with the current situation regarding undocumented immigrants?
Immigration is absolutely, first of all, thank you. Immigration is an economic and moral imperative for the United States of America. We must make sure that we have robust, safe immigration because in order to make sure that we grow, we need to make sure we include everyone. I believe that to address the increasing job skills gap, to increase the ability for our farmers to get labor that they need, we must not use our immigration system as a political chess piece. Senator Stabenow has been in a position for 20 years, again, 20 years, two decades to have had this thing done. And yes, some things move slow and some things move fast, but two decades? And two decades ago, some of those kids weren't born yet. Now they're going to college. This is something that's an imperative. It does not say in the Statute of Liberty, give me your doctors, your lawyers, and your coders. It says that we need to welcome people here who have a job and a skill set. You need to come ready to work and contribute. But I believe that we absolutely must end illegal immigration, and we need to make sure that we have a hospitable time for people to come in who are willing to work and or have skills. Because there's a labor crisis right now. Who here has an easy time finding good skilled labor? Exactly. And so we need to make sure that we're creating an opportunity to have legal immigration and to make sure that it's safe and secure. I served with Dreamers. I work with Dreamers. And it's Senator Stabenow, it's literally her job to bring immigration reform to the table over the past two decades. And so again, when she tells you all the things and all the nice ideas of how we need to move forward, and when she tries to pin the Trump administration and the GOP on me when I just started running a year ago, I want you to ask her, why haven't you gotten it done in 20 years? And why should we believe you this time?
I believe strongly we need comprehensive immigration reform. The last time we had the opportunity to have that happen was in 2013. There was a bipartisan group of us that put together a comprehensive bill that would be great for Michigan. It passed by a very large vote in the United States Senate, and the House of Representatives decided not to take it up. Unfortunately, after that, the next year and the election year and on, it became a political football, and we are losing and hurting as a result of that in Michigan, not only from the standpoint of our farmers who very much need a legal system that works, but for our businesses who need a legal system, our workers who need a legal system to have confidence that someone is not taking their job illegally, so that we have an economy that's based on legal immigration. This is incredibly important. And we also have tremendous strength in Michigan, diversity of people in leadership, in healthcare, in communities around Michigan that are also counting on us having a legal system that works. I work with them in my office and with many of you in my office every day trying to cut through the BS to try to make the legal immigration system work. I also know it's important that we have a system that allows young people who have come here with their parents, who know no other home, who've grown up here, were promised if they stayed and served in the military or went to college, they could stay and earn citizenship. I don't think they should be a political football either, that we should keep our promise to them and have a refugee system and a broader system that does not play games with moms and babies, but does things the right way based on our values and based on something that works. Let me also say we need strong border security, and that's at the top of the list with any immigration reform.
Yes. So comprehensive immigration reform, we all agree, is of extreme importance. We need to get it done. We all agree we need to get it done. And with the census coming up, making sure that we count everyone and make sure that it's legal and we have a plan, and making sure that we retain or grow potential House seats to make sure that we have the power in Washington to advocate for Michigan and also get the funding that we require back here to grow our state. That's also a critical issue that no one's talking about, or why we need comprehensive immigration reform now, and I'm looking forward to delivering it.
Senator, I agree with John on the census. I think this is really important for us in Michigan, so I hope we'll come together on a bipartisan basis to have a census that counts everybody in Michigan.
So there is one question inquiring minds want to know. I'm going to guess this room is split about 50-50. Saturday's a huge matchup. Michigan State. Who's for Michigan? Who's for Michigan State? Do tell. All right.
All right, you got, even though I have blue on, I went to Michigan State, and so we already talked about it when we were in the elevator. We talked about we both had great games last Saturday.
Great games.
Great games last Saturday, and it's going to be a wonderful game next week. My mom knows, she's a Michigan Stater, but we're split right down the middle. My son went to U of M, my daughter went to Michigan State, one brother U of M, one brother Michigan State. But I just got to say, go green. Mr. James, do tell.
Well, I'll tell you, I was really excited to see Coach Harbaugh win a big game against a ranked opponent. That was extremely exciting. It was extremely exciting. I got my second master's from Michigan. I went to West Point, and I think we maybe won negative one games the time I was there. So I had to claim Michigan, but I'm go blue all the way.
And with that, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think we have a split house here, as I'm telling you.
And I know both, your mom is here, Senator,
that's
and your
right.
parents are here, Mr. James, which is very nice.
The parents. My family's right over there. Hi, Lizzie. Hi, Mom.
There we go. So we're getting set for closing statements, and by the coin toss, Senator, you have the first, you have 2 minutes for your closing statement, so the stage is yours.
Well, thanks so much for being here today on a Monday lunch, and to the Detroit Economic Club again for hosting this. This is a very important time for our country and a very difficult time, a very divisive time. And I know that you want me to put my head down and go to work. I go to work every Monday, come back at the end of the week. I see a lot of you on the plane usually, and that you expect me to get beyond that and to work together to get things done. And so that's what I do. I put Michigan first and stand with the president when I believe what he's proposing is right for Michigan. And when he doesn't propose what's right for Michigan, like cutting the Great Lakes funding, I'll put together a bipartisan coalition to be able to save every penny. So for me, it's all about Michigan. And frankly, in these times, I believe this is a time for experience. This is not a time for inexperience when it is so difficult to be able to move through things and get things done. And I know I've been able to do that because of seniority and relationships and skill that I bring to the table for you every single day. As we talked today, I didn't hear any specific solutions. It's easy to talk about the problems. Lord knows, turn on any TV channel and people will talk to you about the problems. That doesn't get us anywhere. Pointing fingers doesn't get us anywhere. It's about specific solutions in complicated problems. And so that's what I bring, is somebody that sits down, whether it's finding a way to keep neighborhood revitalization dollars going in a very tough environment, working with the mayor and business leaders in Detroit 2 years ago. Everything was about ready to stop. I was able to get it done because I figured out in the complicated situation we were in how to do it. And so I just want you to know that I will, if I have the honor of having your support, I will continue to do that. My opponent has said over and over again he's with Donald Trump 2,000%. I want you to know I'm with Michigan 2,000%.
Mr. James, the stage is yours.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here. My father and mother are from the Jim Crow South. My dad was born in 1941 in Starkville, Mississippi, lived directly across the street from Mississippi State University, and couldn't go there because he was black. But he refused to accept dependency as his destiny. He fought through, paid his way through college. He came to Michigan where the opportunity was. He started a trucking company with one truck, one trailer, and no excuses. It's not dissimilar from your stories, because that's the American dream. He trained a son who went out and went to West Point, graduated in 2004, became a Ranger qualified Apache pilot, flew 750 hours combat in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and came back because there were places of our home that looked worse than the combat zone we were flying in. That can't be right. The same place that my father came to for economic opportunity is now a place where there's a caste system forming, where you have people who can't get ahead and people who are going off with better opportunities than the rest of us. I'm looking forward to protecting the American dream for future generations. But Senator Stabenow has been an elected official for 43 years. She has watched our roads crumble.
She's watched our Great Lakes get dirtier. She's watched Canadian trash continue to get dumped here. She's watched our families crumble. I'm an independent thinker. I swore an oath to the Constitution of the United States to protect and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I will stand with Michigan. And I give my oath to this room like I give my oath to this state, and I gave my oath to this country. We need balance. We need to make sure that we have a seat at both tables and make sure that Michigan has a voice in both parties, regardless of who is the majority or who's in the White House. I will work with the president when it benefits Michigan, and I will stand up to the president when it benefits Michigan. Vote person, not party. And do not judge me by the R by my name, but the content of my character. I believe that I've earned it, and so have you. And so when you take a look at experience, combat experience, understanding national security in a way that my opponent can't, and veterans issues that my opponent, in a way that my opponent won't, understanding how to build companies and protect businesses, I would love to have a televised debate so we continue this conversation, Senator, and thank you all for your time.
Ladies and gentlemen, a round of applause for both candidates for taking time out from the campaign trail to be here. To our panel, Chuck, Vicki, and Chad, and the Economic Club here. We'll turn it back over to Steve.
Senator Stabenow and Mr. James, we're honored to host you. Thank you again for choosing the Detroit Economic Club. Journalists, thank you. JR, timekeeper, thank you. I want to shout out to Detroit Public TV for webcasting Lawrence Tech University. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being part of this program. This debate is now adjourned.